and welcome to the Law Matters program for another fortnight. Good to have your company for the next hour here on 100.9 FM Noongar Radio, and shout out to our listeners listening in through 6DBY in Derby, WA, Warringarri Media in Kununurra, WA, and nationally through the National Indigenous Radio Service. I feel like an hour isn't enough for a program this fortnight. What a week it has been. You're with Jodie Hoffman for the next hour, and the program is proudly brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. But what a week indeed. Sunday we saw anti-immigration rallies across the country. The ugly side of Australia certainly rose to the top during those rallies. We saw Camp Sovereignty in Melbourne set upon, and we're also seeing calls for New Zealand-born immigrant neo-Nazi Thomas Sewell to be deported. A change.org site petition has been set up, people calling for his deportation back to New Zealand. In news closer to home, it's been an awful time. We're going to be speaking to the Race Discrimination Commissioner, a fellow by the name of Giridharan Siva Arman. He's going to be joining us to talk about what his views are on the rallies that took place around the country on Sunday. But we're also talking about the effects of racism. The Australian Human Rights Commission has just launched a report, Health Inequities in Australia, a scoping review on the impact of racism on health outcomes and healthcare access. It's all intertwined, isn't it? So we're going to be talking about racism with the Race Commissioner today on the program. Also chatting with Peter Collins, who is the Director of Legal Services with the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, talking about systemic racism, the over-policing of First Nations peoples, and the tragic death in custody and upcoming inquest of a 31-year-old Aboriginal man. We'll also talk about a tasering incident that's currently being reported of another Aboriginal man out of Kalgoorlie. So do stay tuned. Lots to talk about on the program today, and let's kick it off with this song from Clint Bracknell, a song called Break Loose.
Up in a sleepy town with a bruised up purple sky, a flock of clouds come rolling in, a ground bound bird is trying to fly. If you had that chance again, what would you do it just the same? Or would you pitch caution to the wind? Crazy dreams can't keep us sane. You might lose what you don't use, so I think you better break loose. Can you feel it? You might lose what you don't use, I really think you better break loose. I mean it. Remember where we used to go when the big rain came on in? Still got drenched to the bone, sparks dripping off our skin. You could find a little cave and seal everything inside. A million colors hidden will creep out on the weeping tide. You might lose what you don't use, you better break. Can you feel it? You might lose what you don't use, I really think you better break.
he's got a great sound, hasn't he? Clint Bracknell, also known to many of our listeners with the music of Mudderkitch. And kicking off Law Matters for another fortnight, Jodie Hoffman with you for the next hour on 100.9 FM Noongar Radio, nationally via the National Indigenous Radio Service. Good to have your company, as always. It's been a big week. People out in force on Sunday across Australia for the anti-immigration rallies. Lots of racist abuse hurled from city to city. And we want to talk about the effects of racism on a person on Law Matters today. I guess when you grow up as a First Nations person from the moment you're born, you do face racism, and I guess it's something that we all get to deal with on a day-to-day basis, whether it's through walking through a shopping centre or applying for a job or applying for a house. But it was really ugly scenes on the weekend, including the storming of Camp Sovereignty in Melbourne by, 50 men dressed in black racing up the hill, and, you know, peaceful protesters at the other end of it just thinking, what the heck is going on? So we felt it was timely to talk to the Australian Human Rights Commission Race Discrimination Commissioner, and I'd like to welcome to the program Giridharan Sivaraman. Welcome to the program and thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
As the Human Rights Race Discrimination Commissioner, I'm wondering what your take was on the rallies that took place across the country over the weekend.
My take was that people were coming for different reasons, but those rallies platformed neo-Nazism and white supremacists. They were scapegoating migrants for what are actually far more complex problems. And there was violence against First Peoples, really bad violence in the case of Camp Sovereignty. So I think that they're a real wake-up call about how ingrained racism is within our society and how easily the bile of it can spill out to make us all unsafe.
What is the role of the Race Discrimination Commissioner? Because we're going to talk about a report in the health sector that was launched this week that talks about the effects of racism on people. But in your role, what do you do?
Yeah, it's a pretty broad role. My role is one that's created under the Race Discrimination Act, and my job is to educate, advocate, and try and take whatever measures I can to reduce racism in Australia. So no small task. I have a small team that helps me at the commission, a small but brilliant team, and I get to work on particular projects, including a national anti-racist strategy. And through the team, we produce things, for example, like you just pointed to, a report about racism in health.
So under Australian law, what is considered illegal when it comes to racism?
In some senses, we have a broad protection. The Race Discrimination Act was the first ever anti-discrimination law, and it provides a really broad protection. It says that you shouldn't be discriminated against or subjugated in any area of public life based on your race. If that happens, you can make a complaint to the Australian Human Rights Commission. I think, though, the law is not helping people enough, because it puts all the onus on the targets of racism to bring about change. And we need law reform. We actually need a positive duty to eliminate racism for employers and others within the Race Discrimination Act. We need to shift the burden to organisations rather than putting it all on individuals.
Some of the overflow from the rallies on Sunday would have to be considered illegal, wouldn't they, in inciting racial hatred?
Yeah, that's right. Look, just to be clear, the right to protest and lawful and public assembly is a cornerstone of our democracy. There's no question about that. But it needs to be balanced against protection from vilification, hate, and acts that make people unsafe. And there was clearly vilification and hate at these rallies. There was hate speech. There was vilifications of particular groups, including First Peoples, and there was violence. Violence that is now, I believe, being investigated by the authorities, and violence that has injured people. And that, all of that, is unlawful. The difficulty always with these things is people coming forward and corroborating who's done it, and then being able to actually pursue action wherever you need to pursue them.
And, our thoughts are with everybody at Camp Sovereignty in Melbourne, because there was an attack on an Indigenous site after the anti-immigration rally in Melbourne on Sydney. At least 50 men, mostly clad in Black approached Camp Sovereignty as the sun was setting on Sunday afternoon and four people were injured. I noticed in the news reports yesterday that neo-Nazi Thomas Sewell and two other men were arrested outside of the Melbourne Magistrates Court, so we'll watch that space. And as I mentioned at the top of the program, there has been a link set up, a petition on change.org calling for his deportation back to New Zealand. So we've seen the ugly side of racism. It's not new as a First Nations person. We see it on a day-to-day basis. But what are the effects that constant racism has on a person, particularly in relation to their health and welfare?
Look, putting it simply, racism makes people sick, and racism stops people who are sick from getting better and often makes them worse. And that's particularly the case for First Nations people. And we've released a report just yesterday that provides in-depth research which shows exactly that. It's that accumulative effect of constantly being subject to racism, interpersonal racism, but also structural racism. That's the thing we have to remember. People often think, oh, well, if I don't say something racist to someone else, then it's not happening. But actually, what about our systems and structures, whether it be the justice system or the education system or the health system? Are there structural barriers and structural things that are making people unsafe or that are inflicting racism on people? We really need wholesale change, as we've called for in the National Anti-Racism Framework.
My guest is Race Discrimination Commissioner Giridharan Sivaraman, joining me on the line, and you're in Sydney as we speak. I want to talk more about this report. It is all about health inequities in Australia, a scoping review of the impact of racism on health outcomes and healthcare access. Now, I know as a First Nations person that this affects First Nations people, but it affects anybody from all over the country as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, clearly racism affects First Nations people. It's just completely unacceptable that there are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders were dying from diseases that were eradicated in the rest of the population decades ago. That's not an accident. That happens as a result of structural racism. And for broader populations that are diverse and are people of colour, racism clearly impacts on them in terms of a lack of cultural safety, a lack of interpreters, a lack of understanding of the differing ways in which people interact with health services. We build these services to fit one type of person or one size fits all, and that doesn't work. They actually need to be far more dynamic and able to cater to different populations.
And I know here in Western Australia, and the case would be, you know, around the nation as well, that, you know, we have the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. There are Aboriginal legal services throughout the country to deal with the overrepresentation of First Nations peoples within the criminal justice system. There are also specific First Nations medical services in Western Australia. In Perth, we have Derbal Yerrigan. Without these services that are culturally safe for mob to walk into, I think a lot of people wouldn't actually seek the care that they need.
Oh, that's absolutely the case. There are a lot of people who get sick and then don't want to seek help because they don't have access to those particular services like the ones you mentioned. And it shouldn't be the case that you've got to go and find that particular service. It should be that every health service is broad enough and has the learning to be able to cater for everyone. Otherwise, it can become really difficult. And yes, absolutely. Some people think they're a burden on the health system and they don't access health and services. And of course, that means they just get worse.
I want to talk about your own driving forces behind what you do, because you were a principal lawyer back in the day, but your career has really gone off to embrace racial discrimination matters, victims of racial vilification. You're committed to the protection and promotion of the rights of First Nations peoples. What's your motivation?
Firstly, I should say that for me, I believe there can be no racial justice on this land without racial justice for First Peoples. All of the racism that is inflicted not only on First Peoples but on everyone else, it stems from the original colonial acts of violence and racist violence towards First Peoples. So I actually think that we need truth-telling as a way forward to really deal honestly, with our history. And in terms of, for me, I think it's that fundamental denial of equality for matters as trivial as the colour of your skin or where you're from. It's also an ignorance of the true history of this country. I mean, the Yolngu people were trading with Makassan traders well before the British arrived. And we've got, the longest continuous culture in the world, 60 to 80,000 years. It's something that should be celebrated instead of what's been happening for 238 years, which is an attempt to erase it.
Ah, look, that's so true. And you would hope that in 2025 we'd be a much more tolerant nation than we are, and that was evident in the rallies on Sunday. But the report that came out this week by the Australian Human Rights Commission, Health Inequities in Australia, it does highlight that racism does affect the mortality, the chronic illness, and the access to care for First Nations peoples and other negatively racialised communities. What needs to be done to address that?
Look, the first thing, the most significant thing, is law reform. We need to change the system so that there's a positive duty to eliminate racism in workplaces and in the provision of goods and service. Rather than the victims or the targets of racism having to take action, we need health services and other areas that interact with people to actually take positive steps to eliminate racism. That is really important. The second is we need to build mandatory cultural safety learning and standards across all health services. And cultural safety starts as cultural safety for First Nations people. Then the third thing is we need anti-racism approaches. You're not going to get far with diversity, equity and inclusion program, because that's just about getting people in the door. That doesn't necessarily mean they're actually safe once they're through the door or they get the right solutions for them. You need anti-racism work. Sometimes, unfortunately, I think that people seem to think that saying racism is like saying Beetlejuice, where the demon will appear. And I say, well, no, sorry, it's actually here. It's been well entrenched and established for 237 years.
Yep.
You need to acknowledge it and bring about change.
Who's going to benefit from reading this report, Health Inequities in Australia, launched this week by the Australian Human Rights Commission?
First and foremost, health administrators, hospital administrators, but also health ministers, federal and state, any local health authorities. All of them will benefit from this peak body. And some of them have already written and are supporting it, like the Royal Australian College of General Physicians as one example. They're the key people that need to look at this report.
Okay, and it does offer clear, actionable recommendations to support the national anti-racism framework and drive reform across the health sector. Giridharan Sivaraman, Race Discrimination Commissioner, I appreciate your time on our Law Matters program this week. It has been a big week, and I've seen some very disturbing footage of people being vilified when they're riding trains or shouted at in the streets. It's really brought the ugly side of this country to the surface for fair-minded Australians. Following on from the anti-immigration rallies on Sunday, do you have a message for them?
Yeah, I think that fair-minded Australians, and there are many of them, we need to stand up. We need to show that we're curious and genuinely welcoming about people of different cultures and faiths and colours. And that means not just expecting people to assimilate and to erase their own culture, like has happened to First Nations people, but genuinely embracing, learning and broadening our own sense of identity and experience and actually confronting racism, but knowing that that builds a better society for all of us.
Okay. Look, we appreciate your time. First time we've spoken to you on the Law Matters program. Hope it won't be the last, but appreciate your time. Giridharan Sivaraman, the Race Discrimination Commissioner, and just a reminder that the report that we've discussed, Racism in the Health Sector, is available to download on the Australian Human Rights Commission website, as are all of your reports. Keep up the great work, and we appreciate your time.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
This is the Law Matters program. Thank you for tuning in, and plenty more to come, I can tell you. We'll be joined in the studio by Peter Collins, Director of Legal Services at the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Not saying it's a gloom and doom week, but it kind of is, but we'll discuss that more shortly. Let's have a listen to this one from Paul Kelly and Christine Arnoux. This is Last Train.
This is the train.
Beautiful sound, and what a great pairing up, Christine Arnoux and Paul Kelly and Last Train, and the National NAIDOC Ball this year. The host city was Perth, and Christine's gorgeous daughter was up on stage and building out a tune. So they say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I tell you what, in that case, it's definitely true. This is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Just talking a short time ago with the Race Discrimination Commissioner from the Australian Human Rights Commission about racism. And I tell you what, when you work in the legal sector for First Nations peoples anywhere around the country, you see racism on a day-to-day basis. You hear the stories as clients walk through the door and tell you what's happened to them. And we have the tragic ongoing deaths in custody, over 600 Aboriginal deaths in custody since the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody was released back in 1991. WA had the worst name for it back then, and boasts that same worst name today in 2025. So to discuss this and more, welcome to the studio Peter Collins, Director of Legal Services at the Aboriginal Legal Service in WA. Peter, thanks for your time. I'm just not getting much sound out of you. We're going to say hello again. And
G'day, Jodie, and hello to all your listeners.
Peter, Sunday's rallies. That's disturbing stuff, isn't it?
Oh, it's awful. Just awful, Jodie. And what happened in Melbourne in particular with the desecration of Aboriginal culture and the attacks on Aboriginal people is just mind-boggling.
It really is. So our thoughts are with everyone at Camp Sovereignty in Melbourne. You know, it must have been pretty terrifying. 50 blokes dressed in black charging up the hill where people were just there peacefully.
Absolutely.
You know, insignificant place for mob in Nam. So, yeah, look, I think, you know, rallies like the March for Australia anti-immigration rallies really do show the very ugly side that can be felt by people from all cultural backgrounds. We see the ugly side that's faced by First Nations peoples who need the services of the Aboriginal Legal Service. And to start off, Pete, just want to talk about a very, very tragic death in custody in Eastern Goldfields Regional Prison in April of this year. And, you know, just letting our listeners know that, you know, we do have to cover some sensitive topics on this program, and we know some of them aren't easy to listen to, but it's important to try and advocate for change and make sure that this doesn't continue any longer for our mob. I'm referring to a 31-year-old man, Mr. Ryan, who died in custody in the Eastern Goldfields Regional Prison in Kalgoorlie-Boulder, Peter, which is approximately 600 kilometres east of Perth. What's the background for us, please?
Well, maybe I should start with this, Jode. What I've been told is that there's been 8 deaths in custody in Western Australia in this calendar year, so around about 8 months of this year, there's been 8 deaths in custody, and there were 18 deaths in custody last year in Western Australia. So those numbers are pretty damning, because the awful reality is the overwhelming majority of those deaths involve prisoners taking their own lives, which begs the question as to how on earth that can happen in an affluent place like Western Australia. The awful story about Mr. Ryan is that he was in an incredibly vulnerable state when he was arrested by police and refused bail by the police and then appearing in Kalgoorlie Magistrates Court. His vulnerability would have been very obvious to all who dealt with him. That includes police, security staff in the custody facilities at Kalgoorlie Magistrates Court, the magistrate, ALS lawyers, on it goes. So he would have been demonstrably vulnerable when he was received into Eastern Goldfields Prison. Within a short period of time of entering the prison, he'd taken his life and he was dead. It's been reported over the last couple of days that a female police officer in Kalgoorlie was recorded as telling someone that she'd interviewed a man the other day and, quoting, he was like, "I'm going to kill myself." She goes on to say, "And I was like, yeah, whatever. Put him in the cells. He went to prison the next day and then killed himself." And she signs off with a laugh and the words, lol, and then sends a follow-up message, "Don't tell anyone that." A couple of things about those words for me. First, for anyone, let alone a police officer, to say those things is despicable. Second, to say them in the joking way that she did is even worse. And thirdly, WA police should have zero tolerance for police officers who express those sentiments, and she should be run out of the police force. Yes. The final thing is this. Those sorts of comments and attitudes completely dehumanise Aboriginal people. And we're dealing here with a young man who has died in the custody of the state. Every which angle you come at it, it's appalling and inexcusable, and it highlights how far this place has to go before things meaningfully improve for Aboriginal people, particularly Aboriginal people in the justice system.
My guest is Peter Collins, Director of Legal Services at the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Peter, you've been in this role with the ALS for a long time now, and it's not the first time you've seen systemic racism at its worst, is it?
Absolutely not. Sadly, it's a daily reality for Aboriginal people, especially in terms of their interaction with police. The ALS sees all the time examples of Aboriginal people being on the receiving end of really poor attitudes and behaviours by police, and the inescapable conclusion for me is that's underpinned by racism. Has to be.
Our thoughts and condolences are with the family of the late Mr. Ryan. Tough enough losing a loved one, but then to have those comments surface is just abominable. It's just
heartbreaking.
It is absolutely heartbreaking. And just what astounds me, Peter, is that, as I mentioned, there's been over 600 deaths in custody since the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody, but there's never been a criminal conviction for any Aboriginal death in custody.
There hasn't been, and that's across the country, not just Western Australia. And the most recent example of that is the tragic death of JC in Geraldton, who was shot and killed by a police officer. And the tragedy of that case has a whole lot of strands to it. First of all, she was shot and killed by a police officer 16 seconds after he arrived at the scene where there were a number of other police officers already present, and the situation in terms of their dealings with JC were in hand. He's charged with murder and acquitted. He keeps his job. Not only does he keep his job, he's promoted after the shooting. Go figure. You know, back in the day, the catalyst, of course, for the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody was the death in police custody of the Aboriginal teenager, John Pat.
Yeah.
There were six police officers who'd been playing golf who came to the hotel he was at, arrested him, took him back to Roebourne Police Station, and a few hours later, he's dead. He suffered what's called blunt force trauma. He'd been assaulted, apparently, but they were acquitted as well.
And it's bizarre because, yes, you know, 16-year-old John Pat was the catalyst for the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. We're always, you know, screaming that there are still recommendations from that commission report that haven't been implemented.
That's correct. And that then circles back to the situation with Mr. Ryan in Eastern Goldfields Regional Prison. There'll be a coronial inquest, of course, as there has to be into his death, which will shine a light on the circumstances surrounding his passing. But if the case, as I understand it, if the case is that he had access to what's called a ligature point, and that was the cause of his death, that's an outrage. It's 2025. It's not the 1980s. Eastern Goldfields Regional Prison was completely rebuilt about 10 years ago. It's a relatively new prison. You shouldn't have ligature points which enable people to take their lives by hanging themselves in a modern correctional facility in 2025. I don't know for sure if that's how he took his life, but if he did, that's an indictment on government.
WA Premier has said that the behaviour of that female WA police officer who laughed at the detainee's death in custody is unacceptable. I think it's unacceptable that more's not done to make sure that there is never another death in custody. What are your views, Pete?
I think the response of the Premier is an all too predictable one because it involves nothing more than political doublespeak. It's one thing to criticise the outrageous comments of a stupid police officer, but it's another thing to talk about journeys and historical facts and the difficult experience of Aboriginal people in the justice system and so on. That's just guff. It doesn't make any sense. It's just hot air to fob off a question from a journalist. This government needs to face up to the fact that if it wants to go anywhere near achieving the objectives, for example, under closing the gap, it's got to do some meaningful stuff in collaboration with the Aboriginal community to not just reduce but eliminate deaths in custody. And you're not going to be able to do that in the current state of affairs where you have prisons which are grossly overcrowded, where you have prisoners who are locked in their cells, tiny cells for 23 hours a day, and in the hour they have out, they've got to make the dreadful choice, do I have a shower or do I wait in the queue to make a phone call to family, or do I forego that and go outside for a bit of fresh air and to see the sky? That's just a hotbed for further deaths in custody, and they've talked about this for an eternity, but they've literally done nothing meaningful to alleviate it.
What was the Aboriginal Legal Services involvement in this matter?
The ALS is assisting the family of Mr. Ryan and is more than happy and will appear for the family at the coronial inquest when it takes place.
And unfortunately, that is usually a time-consuming process. Doesn't happen as quickly as grieving families need it to be, but that's the process that is worked within. And I guess the burning question on everyone's lips is the female police officer. What happened to her?
I think she's been stood down. That's as far as it got. But again, this is in response to adverse media publicity. You know, no one's proactive about it. It's only when the blowtorch is applied that something happens.
My guest is Peter Collins, Director of Legal Services. We're going to pause and have a listen to some music and come back and speak more with Peter in a moment. But if this the topic of this interview has raised any issues for you, you know that you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or YARN, 13 YARN, which is an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander crisis support line, operates 24/7 every day of the year. And when you ring up that number, it's mob there listening, non-judgmental. They're there to just have a yarn with you and try and help you out if you've got any issues that you want to talk about. That number is 139276 13 YARN, 139276. Let's pause and have a listen to Karilpa Reach with I Know.
I'm getting ready. Reflections of the past, that's what the angels say to me. Oh, you're not alone. Yeah, you're not alone. You're not alone. I know, I know, I know. I'm getting ready, this race you're in ain't fun, so stay steady. When your heart and mind ain't one, life can get heavier. I know, I know, I know, I'm getting ready.
Days are coming, got all the people running round. Stay like the trees and keep your roots strapped to the ground. That's the way it's told to me. Oh, over the rolling hills, the time has slipped away. And in the foreign lands, the angels they call the same.
That's a nice sound, isn't it? Karilpa Reach, and I know, here on the Law Matters program, brought to you each fortnight by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia in our 15th year on air. Thank you for tuning in, and a reminder that if you do miss our programs, they're repeated on Noongar Radio in Perth on a Sunday night, but also go nationally through the National Indigenous Radio Service, as well as beaming out to remote communities in WA through 6DBY in Derby, and also Wurundjeri Media in Kununurra. And if you miss all of that, all of the podcasts from our last 15 years are on the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA website, www.als.org.au. A difficult program this hour, joined in the studio by Peter Collins, Director of Legal Services with the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Been in the role for a long time now, Pete. How long?
Jody, I think this about the 21st year, 21 years.
I reckon it's a bit longer than that, because I've been there for 20.
You might be right. I've been at the ALS heading up towards 27, 28 years, I think, overall.
And about 21 in as DLS. Yeah. A difficult job, a challenging job, seeing some really tragic cases in your time. Yes. As leading up all of the criminal law unit at the Aboriginal Legal Service, and bearing in mind we've got over 200 staff across 12 offices, so there's a lot of matters that do get brought to your attention. The latest one, no exception, a young Aboriginal man in Kalgoorlie was treated a little overzealously, shall we say. Tell us about what happened.
Well, this man, police were dealing with some other Aboriginal people. Hard to know why. This man walked over, and as he was doing that, he was giving police the one-finger salute, as they say. Wasn't saying anything else to them, and wasn't otherwise behaving aggressively, walked up to police, said to them, at one point, do you want to arrest my finger? Not a bad line, I reckon. The response of the police was immediately to issue him with a move-on order. They then asked for him to confirm his details. He had a letter in his pocket, which had his name and his presumably his address. He gave it to police. He wanted it back. They said, you have to wait. He was insistent. And at worst, he was a bit of a nuisance. He was being a bit annoying. A police officer then pushed him really violently in the chest, and he stumbled backwards several metres, got up, walked back towards the police, again, not aggressively, and was met with another push, which spread-eagled him a few metres back again. Mm-hmm. He then walks back to the police, takes off his shirt in a pretty half-hearted fashion, sort of feigns like he wants to box with them, and a police officer tases him. He hits the ground, and then two police officers handcuff him with his hands behind his back, and he's arrested, charged with disorderly behaviour.
The good outcome of that is that the Corruption and Crime Commission are reviewing the police contact after that man was pushed and tasered in Kalgoorlie. Do we know how he is?
I think he's okay. Yeah. Sensibly, the charges against him were discontinued by the police. However, a complaint made by ALS to WA Police about the conduct of police on this occasion came to nothing. Their response was what took place was lawful, wasn't excessive, and was appropriate in all the circumstances.
There's been another lot of footage doing the rounds in the last week from the Pilbara, which showed another Aboriginal man in another region of Western Australia by another cop being pushed. The good thing is that people have mobile phones now. They can film. We can see what is going on the ground. But it's just an absolute disgrace, isn't it, that you've got people who don a uniform for the day and they feel that it has the right to treat someone as substandard, some human, and inhumanely.
Absolutely. I mean, the footage of what happened to that man in Kalgoorlie is horrifying.
Yeah.
And the casual violence engaged in, completely without just cause by the police, is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally and utterly unnecessary. It was their job to take whatever heat was in the situation, and there wasn't much in any event, out of the situation, but they resort to violence and tasering. Yeah, this man, the other thing about this fellow was, it looked like he was probably affected by alcohol. But by any measure, he was pretty harmless. It's an incredibly dangerous thing to push him violently backwards on two occasions as they did, and he completely loses balance. All it takes is for him to hit his head on a rock and he's dead. Likewise, with the tasering, incredibly dangerous activity. They didn't have any of the medical material they used to clean people after being tasered. He had to wait till he got back to the police station for that. Again, whatever angle you come at it, Jody, it's just inexcusable and so totally unnecessary.
And we've seen tragedies in the past, Peter Collins, of, you know, the effects of tasers on people. It can be lethal, and you do not know the health conditions of people, and particularly the you know, dire health conditions that are faced by so many First Nations peoples, and you throw in a taser to the mix. These are lethal decisions that could be made.
That's absolutely true. You know, it can bring on a heart attack. It can cause death. And tasers were first introduced on the pretext that they would be used in serious incidents. And like police dogs, which are set upon Aboriginal people a lot, they're being deployed in totally benign situations as occurred in Kalgoorlie.
All right. That footage is all over the news. You just need to Google Taser Kalgoorlie. You'll see it. It's very, very concerning. And, you know, we just not only have to, you know, legally support and advocate for mob, we also have to act as that watchdog, don't we, Peter, to make sure that, you know, the government is listening, aware, and changes the situation so that these sorts of things can't continue to happen.
Absolutely. We've got a very important and critical role in trying to keep people and agencies like WA Police accountable, because if we don't do it, these sort of things occur all the time. And unfortunately for a lot of the community, it's normalised. It's accepted. And I'm not saying that to be critical of anyone. And equally, people don't complain because they're afraid of repercussions. So, as has happened for many, many years, Aboriginal people often cop it on the chin when they're on the receiving end of bad behaviour by police. But what I can suggest to your listeners is, if you have, say, a mobile phone recording of police behaving inappropriately, like what happened in Headland. In Headland, that man had his head rammed into the metal pole of a metal pole as they were arresting. He wasn't doing anything untoward. And then another police officer grabbed a box of alcohol and threw it over the fence. Again, outrageous stuff. So if you have footage like that, or you're aware of police officers behaving inappropriately, please alert the ALS. I can't say we've got the solution, but we certainly will raise the complaints when needed. And I think, just in conclusion, Jody, the final thing I'd want to say is this. If we want to complain about police misconduct like this in Western Australia, our first and often only option is to complain to police. Police investigating police is ridiculous. 99% of our complaints go nowhere, and the time has come for a police complaints authority to be established, which is independent of police, which is set up under a piece of legislation and is properly resourced. That's the only way that you're going to get proper accountability and transparency in investigations of police complaints, because the current system is a joke.
Peter Collins, thank you for your time on Law Matters. And a reminder to our listeners that if today's program has caused you any issues, please do call Lifeline on 131114 or 13 Yarn on 139276. 13 Yarn on 139276. That wraps up Law Matters for another fortnight. Thank you to Peter Collins for spending so much time and bringing us up to date with some of the issues faced by First Nations mob in Western Australia. We look forward to your company again next fortnight. Thank you. Until then, take care.